Hello, everyone. We are back on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. My name is Dan Mott, and we thank you for being with us this week. We had to skip the cast once again last week due to some scheduling conflicts, so we apologize once again for that, and we are happy to be back, and we are glad you guys are with us. With me today, as always, we have Pro Football Weekly NFL writer Eric Edholm. Eric, how's it going, man?
Everything's good. Just gearing up as we get closer to camp.
Awesome. We also have Pro Football Weekly managing editor Arthur Arkish with us as well. Arthur, how's it going?
Everything's great, Dan. We're looking forward to making up for lost time here on the Pro Football Weekly podcast. Thanks to the listeners for being back with us this week.
Absolutely, guys. Well, on our last podcast, we continued our division-by-division breakdown in the AFC West, talking about the floors and ceilings of each team. This week, we move into the NFC, and we are focusing on the NFC East. We'll also take a look at the NFC East win totals later in the show and get you some of our wagers. But guys, we have been doing this each week. Let's lead off with some headlines. And we're going to start today with Jameis Winston being in the news recently regarding a groping allegation, which is very serious stuff, stemming from an Uber ride back in November, which is likely resulting in a suspension. Arthur, the Bucs are going nowhere fast with a suspended Winston behind center, are they?
Yeah, I mean, it was going to be a really tough early season schedule, even with their franchise quarterback or you know, who they hope will be their franchise quarterback healthy. And to be without him is really just a brutal situation. It's a make or break season for both the quarterback and the coach, Dirk Cutter. He's got a 14-18 record through two seasons, got the job just because of his work with Jameis. And there have been, you know, I think there have been some improvements on the field. Actually, in fairness, I think there's been tangible evidence that he is making small strides on the field, statistical evidence. But from a decision-making standpoint, and we'll be very careful here, Dan already said these are allegations. There is no criminal case here, but a very, you know, upset Uber driver in Arizona from an incident 2 years ago felt that she was, you know, assaulted or groped unfairly. So this pattern of decision-making, alleged decision-making that has followed Jameis Winston from Tallahassee, Eric, is certainly disturbing.
Well, you said decision-making, it applies to his on-field play, which, right. you know, he made mistakes in the red zone, crucial times of the game, those sorts of things. And it also applies, of course, to the off-the-field stuff, you know, the cloud that followed him from Florida State with, you know, being, you know, named in a rape case there. Now, ultimately, the school found him not liable for that. 4 years later, we have this incident that may or may not have occurred in Arizona, and he may be innocent of those allegations. That's something that we, like you said, we have to point out. However, where he can be criticized was the decision not to A, properly report this incident to the NFL, and B, you know, to apparently mislead investigators on who was there and who wasn't and who was involved. And one of the guys who may have been there, somebody who's in prison for rape. So even being around people like that has to be the kind of thing that Winston must avoid. So his future very much up in the air, you know, heading into his fourth year. This is a crucial time in his career, and the Bucs have to decide whether he is an accountable person and also an accountable football player who deserves an extension for them.
Guys, the supplemental draft is July 11th. Of course, if a team selects a player in the supplemental draft, it is forced to surrender a draft pick of the same round it selects the player in the following year's NFL draft. Any player who goes undrafted immediately becomes a free agent. We've not seen a supplemental drafted player since Isaiah Battle in 2015 by the Rams. Eric, you have a piece on ProFootballWeekly.com on the draftable defensive backs. Do you think somebody like WMU's Sam Beal could be the highest supplemental pick since Josh Gordon in 2012?
No, I don't think he'll go that high. You know, I wrote that a couple weeks ago, and you know, there was some feeling that maybe he would go that high. I'm starting to get the idea that he could be a third or a fourth round pick, maybe a fifth at the lowest. But I think Beal is probably of those four names. There's now since been another linebacker added to the mix as well. But of the four players available, three are defensive backs. I think Beal is probably the top choice there. He's got his pro day this week. You know, we'll find out information from that. I think physically speaking, Adonis Alexander from Virginia Tech might actually be a little bit more impressive. I mean, he fits the mold of a modern cornerback, and I was talking to some folks about him, and you know, Alexander was just a knucklehead. One scout I was talking to who said, hey, go back and watch the interception he made against NC State back in 2015. This is now, you know, more than two seasons ago. And they said, you watch that and you think, oh my goodness, this is a star in the making, you know, on the boundary or on the out of bounds line, athletic ability for weeks, you know, look like the kind of player who's going to be a rising star at a school that's produced a ton of DB talent. But maturity issues, accountability issues, you know, it's always something. That was the quote that the scout gave me about him. So, you know, more so than his impressive pro day showing a couple weeks ago, he's got to prove to teams that he can be a mature guy. I think he'll still have a chance of being have a pick used on him, but I believe it's going to be lower than Beal, who, you know, picked off Sam Darnold last year, has made some nice moments. His coach said, hey, I wanted him back. You know, this is not a character thing for him. We wished he hadn't run into the academic issues he did, which ultimately forced him to declare for this draft.
Arthur, how often do teams really focus on this supplemental draft?
Yeah, it's not a big area of focus. I think we can liken it, guys, to maybe the after the second, third wave of free agency when you get into the summer months. These guys are available for a reason, whether it's character concerns, age, injury. There's extra, you know, sort of data that needs to be weighed. And it's another opportunity for teams to, you know, improve themselves heading into training camp. So this is a unique year still, as Eric laid out in his piece from a couple weeks ago. We could push people toward that. And I've actually asked our Greg Gabriel to do a little scouting of these three big prospects as well. So look for something on our site next week. But I don't know, maybe look at teams that have some future draft capital, whether we're talking about, well, still the Cleveland Browns, obviously. The Indianapolis Colts picked up some extra ammunition in their trade down. And John Dorsey and Chris Ballard, obviously former colleagues and guys that have been known to take chances on players. So those are two teams to consider. You can throw the New England Patriots in there as well. They've got a ton of future draft capital as well. But it will be fun to have kind of a draft 2.0, if you will, in the summer months that carries a little bit more intrigue than in the usual offseason.
And guys, one other team to keep in mind, the Jacksonville Jaguars. I know we don't necessarily think of them as needing a cornerback, but you know, if Ramsey or Bouye went down, they would be a different team. You know, they lost their slot guy this year. They're expecting DJ Hayden to go there and take that starting nickel role. But that's that coaching staff, whether it's Doug Marrone, you know, he worked with Tim Douse, the Western Michigan defensive coordinator. Their cornerback coach, Nick Sanchez, was on that Syracuse staff with him as well. You know, they don't have a lot of depth at corner. Tyler Patman, Jalen Myrick, guys like that. So don't be shocked. This is a team that was so close to a Super Bowl a year ago. Beal, especially, I think, could be somebody that fits in there. Other teams I've heard connected to Alexander, you know, the Jets, they look for those long corners. The Chiefs certainly could add more defensive talent. And the Colts, as you mentioned, Arthur, they've got draft capital and defensive needs.
Well, Eric, speaking of the Chiefs, the NFL rejects Chiefs offensive guard Dr. Laurent Duvernay-Tardif's request to add MD to the back of his uniform because, well, it's the NFL, and sometimes we know that it can be known as the uptight league. Why not let the guy put MD on his jersey? I mean, he's certainly earned it, hasn't he?
Well, sure. And, you know, obviously we've seen the NFL let guys like Ocho Cinco change their jersey, and yet they won't allow this. I mean, it's a stupid story. A week now, we won't be talking for it. But I've never seen a league like the NFL that gets handed so many easy victories, you know, public relations wins that they can just chalk up. A couple of years ago, I thought things were changing. You know, I was at the owners' meetings here in Chicago. Arthur, I think you were there as well. And they decided to kind of loosen up the celebration rules. And they made a big deal out of it. And Brian McCarthy from the league office, you know, had a smile on his face. And Roger Goodell was having a good time with it. And, you know, Al Riveron, the new referee, was touting it. I thought, okay, this is it. They get it. They understand now that it helps the game and it helps PR. Now, this case, obviously, with the jersey, we're just talking about a fun little PR story. Maybe something that sells extra jerseys. Maybe it touts the good work done by the players. A unique story here of a guy who's an actual doctor. And yet they let this one go by and say, nope, well, there are arcane rules, so you can't do this. It's just, you know, it's more eye-rolling than it is awful. But it's still one of those things that I never get how people don't see all these PR opportunities in the league office as just free money, and they could do it. They could make this thing into a positive. They choose not to. That's their option.
Give the NFL lemonade and they'll find a way to turn it back into just lemons.
God bless you. That's good.
It's a weird deal. And this is a guy we should add. A, he's the first active player who has actually become a doctor. So there is no precedent here. You mentioned the Ocho Cinco thing. That was a little different, of course. But B, and it's not relevant to this particular story, but he's a really good player. I mean, he signed a big time extension with the Chiefs. This isn't a bottom of the roster guy. This is a dude who has had a lot of success on the field and deserves, you know, should be commended for all the extra time he puts in off the field. And I should add, just very quickly, Eric, the NFL did get the celebration one right, and it did kind of make in a brutal season, there was some highlights or some good vibe stories coming from those fun celebrations, but God forbid they actually do two things right in a row. So this is disappointing, but not in the least bit surprising.
Well, guys, finally, as we wrap up some of our headlines, the Atlanta Falcons made a nice late June signing in the former Chiefs safety, Ron Parker. Arthur, what other unsigned vets could still make for shrewd additions?
Yeah, I mean, I think you could probably just, Eric, we could just stick at the safety position. I cannot for the life of me figure out what's been going on at that position that's seemingly never been more important on the field, and yet teams aren't biting on the likes of, well, of course, Eric Reed, and there's some extra some extra parts of that story, of course, with the protesting. The dude in San Diego last year, is it Boston, right? Had a really nice year and hasn't signed yet, and I'm not sure about this one. Did Kenny Vaccaro end up landing with the Dolphins, or did that not become official?
I don't believe so. I don't know. If it has, it may have happened right as we were taping this or something, but I hadn't heard that as being official.
So right there, three productive safeties. There's not enough good ones to go around, and it's kind of weird to wrap my head around. And then, of course, there's the bigger names. You know, Dez Bryant's going to land somewhere eventually. DeMarco Murray will land somewhere eventually. It's probably going to take some camp injuries. You know, Colin Kaepernick, he's going to land. No, just kidding. But those other guys, I think, are all worth keeping tabs on as this next month unfolds. And unfortunately, once camps open, once injuries do start to crop up.
Yeah, I'm a little surprised that a couple of names, now these are sort of players with, you know, good profiles. You mentioned Brian, obviously, you know, that's probably the biggest name. But two players who stand out. Now, Luke Joeckel has never played up to his promise as the second pick in the draft. But we're talking about a 26-year-old offensive lineman. I think there's got to be a spice. Play guard, he's played tackle. I feel like at some point someone's going to have an injury. He'll get a call. And Jonathan Hankins, you know, I mean, he was sort of miscast a little bit in that new Colts defense. So, you know, he's another player that if he's willing to, I think for a little bit less money and a chance to make more later, he could be a nice little late addition. But yeah, obviously we're kind of watching Bryant, we're watching the safeties, and then maybe some of those veteran corners like, I don't know, Sean Smith and DRC and those guys might get called on. Adam Jones too. He could return to Cincinnati. I forgot about him, but yeah, there's still some talented players out there.
Well, guys, as we said in the top of the show, we are continuing our division by division breakdown and talking about some of the potential for each team and where they might need improvements. And this week we are turning to the NFC and taking a spin around the NFC East, starting with the defending Super Bowl champs, the Philadelphia Eagles. And guys, as you know, there's a lot to chat about with this team, except for the Patriots 1 year before them. Has a Super Bowl champ in recent memory executed a following offseason this impressive, Arthur?
Yeah, I mean, if we were talking about this 5 years ago, it would have been a lot more unheard of. A team kind of doubling down on their success the previous season and loading up on the plug-and-play vets, where they're talking about a Michael Bennett or a Mike Wallace, you know, Haloti Ngata, certainly some big-name dudes that come in and figure to have roles right out of the gate. But then, you know, the Patriots went and did that last year and then obviously returned to the Super Bowl, couldn't quite get the deal done. But it is impressive, and it is kind of in Howie Roseman's DNA at this point. That's how he built the Super Bowl champion. And I credit him for not taking his foot off the gas, because it's now more than ever, the shelf life or the window isn't open long for most NFL teams. And pretty cool to see Roseman kind of going for it again. And I'll tell you what, with that roster he has assembled or kind of recalibrated here this offseason, not a lot of reasons to think that he's not going to have a chance to be back where he was in February.
And Eric, I mean, what do newcomers like Dallas Goedert and Torrey Smith and sophomore Mac Hollins, what do those guys bring to this offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're good complementary players. I don't really know what you know, what's going to happen with Goddard. You know, obviously with all his athleticism, he's still got to sort of learn what, you know, what Trey Burton described to me as a pretty complex system and one that moves them around a little bit. And Burton's in Chicago now, so he could step into that role. But, you know, with Brent, I mean, with not Brent Celek, who's the I'm blanking on the tight end there.
Zach Ertz.
Yeah, Zach Ertz. God, I just escaped me for a minute. But yeah, with Ertz kind of establishes that go-to guy. You know, they can use him situationally. And the same with Hollins. I mean, you know, we saw Nelson Aguilar take a big step forward last year. And maybe Hollins is that guy. I've always been intrigued by his physical skills. I mean, he's 6'4", 220, runs like a deer. He's a great special teamer. Maybe his offensive role expands a little bit. But, you know, other than, you know, maybe Corey Clement getting some more carries on offense, Jay Ajayi becoming a little more steeped in things, you know, we're still talking about kind of the same core from last year. You know, that's the beautiful thing here with Wentz now back and appearing on track to return from injury.
Well, and Arthur, before we move on to talking about the defensive side of the ball with this team, reasonable expectations for Wentz, and does Foles' new deal lock him into Philly's 2018 plans? What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, the second part first, I think it does, and I was real unsure of that prior to them reworking his deal and putting a little bit of extra sweetener on there, realizing they've got a Super Bowl MVP who is very likely to ride the bench when the season begins. Boy, is that unusual. So, yeah, just, again, if you're going for it, as clearly the Eagles are, it doesn't make a lot of sense to get rid of Nick Foles unless someone just, you know, makes you an offer you cannot refuse once that inevitable injury does pop up in training camp. Because you don't want to be left with Nate Sudfeld and Joe Callahan, who've combined, I believe, for zero regular season pass attempts. So as far as Carson Wentz, look, with Twitter and videos at practice and all this hype that's kind of hard to tame, and not to mention where he left off with 33 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, something absurd like that when he got hurt in December. Expectations are going to be absurd as well. It probably pretty unreasonable, but I would just remind everyone that, again, I think he got hurt December 13th, and this wasn't just a standard ACL tear. So while we can look from afar and see how impressive the videos appear and that he seems to be all the way back, I would try and temper people's expectations and remember just how young he is and how quickly he did ascend last year. He's got a lot to overcome with that injury and trying to pick up where he left off last season.
Eric, we talked about on the defensive side of the ball a moment ago, Haloti Ngata and some of
Michael
these other guys.
Michael Bennett,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, how does a big acquisition of he and Ngata look now with Jernigan out?
Yeah, I mean, Timmy Jernigan, obviously losing him was big, but they feel like Ngata can kind of step in and do some of, you know, at least take his place. They're different players, but, you know, you've got Elijah Qualls last year. I remember the coaching staff kind of talking him up as a possible sleeper. You know, Derek Barnett at end, you know, they bring back Chris Long. That was huge. Brandon Graham had the, you know, kind of the year of his life last year. Bennett can play inside or out. They draft Josh Sweat in round 4. So, you know, they're not lacking for depth up front. I think they'll be fine in that regard. You know, Fletcher Cox, I forgot about the best three technique in the division. So, yeah, I mean, I guess if there's a weakness, it might be on the second level. You know, I mean, there's a little depth concern at linebacker and you know, fitting all these pieces in the secondary. But we're nitpicking. I mean, I guess the Super Bowl is proof that teams can move the ball on this club. But we're talking about one of the best offenses in the league. So, you know, for all their little spots that could be a little bit better, I mean, that pass rush, you know, the aggressiveness of Jim Schwartz and an offense that's going to put teams behind a lot. I mean, that's a great situation. It's hard not to be excited about this team's potential again.
These guys just rode the season thriving on being the underdogs. And I mean, they even got that on the inside of their Super Bowl rings. You had the little dog mask, I think, engraved on the inside of those rings. I mean, does this team enter the 2018 season still kind of being looked at as the underdogs again, Arthur?
No, absolutely not. Now they have to adjust. It's a great point by you, Dan. But again, that's going to be one of the more intriguing narratives of this team is how they respond to now being the favorites, even in a conference that just I've been calling it the NFC arms race when you look at what the Rams and the Vikings did. But still, the Eagles are going to be on that perch until someone knocks them off of it. And again, that's with this type of roster. You know, maybe it's worth noting some of the coaching turnover they had, but there are not a lot of holes you can kind of pick here, a lot of holes you can poke in what they've got going. And that's why we're looking for narratives like they go from the underdogs to the favorites, or will they have Malcolm Jenkins and Chris Long in that locker room? So do we have to worry about the activism distractions? It's silly, of course, but I don't know. It's a quiet news time, and those are the kind of things you're looking for on a team without a lot of weaknesses.
Let's shift our focus over to Washington and the likelihood of Alex Smith replicating that 2017 season in a similar scheme, but likely without that KC caliber skill talent, unless somebody like Jamison Crowder explodes or Josh Dotson puts it all together and Jordan Reed actually stays healthy. Eric, what are your thoughts here?
Yeah, you pointed out all the big things. I mean, right, if Dotson is at full development, if Crowder steps up again and has the big games that he's shown he's capable of having, last year was kind of an inconsistent season. And remember, they signed Paul Richardson, too. I mean, you know, you kind of forget about him a little bit. I mean, if everything goes perfectly, they do have some firepower. And you have to throw Darius Geist in that mix, the rookie running back. I believe he has the potential to be a star, at least early in his career. We'll see how long he lasts. If Chris Thompson comes back, I mean, that's a lot of options right there. So, yeah, Alex Smith might have had a little better scenario going on in Kansas City 4 years into that program. Same, you know, roughly the same coaching staff except for Doug Peterson leaving. A lot of the same skill position talent. And then they add the rookie runner in Hunt last year. But, you know, I don't think Washington's that far behind. And again, they're hoping that Trent Williams stays healthy. And, you know, you're sort of crossing your fingers that you don't go down that same injury road they did last year when they were just devastated. But if they just get a little bit of good luck in that regard, I don't know. I've been spending the whole offseason trying to convince Arthur that maybe they're not as bad as a lot of people think. I mean, I get some of the concerns, but I think it's a pretty good spot for Alex Smith and Jay Gruden, and they could do some decent things offensively.
Arthur, I mean, with a vet acquisition like Smith, what could that mean for Jay Gruden's job security?
Yeah, I think it's now or never. One playoff appearance in, 4 years, I think it is. He's had a plucky group. I mean, I thought that they overachieved late last year, given all the injuries they dealt with. And I think in Jay Gruden, we know what he is at this point in terms of an offensive, you know, play caller and strategist. He's very good, very talented. But that's, a mercurial organization, obviously, with Daniel Snyder and Bruce Allen. And I don't think they're going to put up with another non-playoff season. And let's tie it back to what the actual question you asked. When you make that trade, when you give up a young cornerback, a promising guy like Kendall Fuller, just to kind of to rid yourselves of the Kirk Cousins saga, but when you bring in someone like Alex Smith coming off a career year, which should have been a Pro Bowl season, there's not going to be a lot of grace period, nor should there. This is a team that appears to be ready to compete now, and I believe Gruden's job is going to depend on it.
Eric, do you feel like we're kind of sleeping on that Washington D a bit, despite the turnover to pass D?
Yeah, possibly, especially, you know, they draft Deron Payne, they get Jonathan Allen back, and, you know, Preston Smith kind of steps into a key role. He's a player I love coming out. He hasn't quite put it all together yet. So, you know, I mean, he and Ryan Kerrigan could be a very good pair outside. I don't know what Pernell McPhee's going to give him, but all of a sudden you look and they've got pretty good linebackers. They've got the makings of a decent defensive line. I like this Matt Ioannidis kid. I've been watching a little of their tape, and I was actually surprised how well he played last year as kind of an unknown guy out of Temple. He was like a fifth or sixth round pick a couple of years ago. But the big question is, as Arthur kind of laid out, isn't that secondary? You know, we lose Fuller. He was great in the nickel last year. I don't know if they feel like Quentin Dunbar could play that role again. He kind of was bad there 2 years ago. Or if it's going to be Orlando Scandrick's job. You know, people forget he was one of the better nickels in football a couple years ago in Dallas. Now he's sort of forgotten about a little bit. Fabian Moreau, they get, you know, last year out of UCLA. He was a first-round type of talent who slipped to the third for injuries. Monte Nicholson played pretty well last year. You know, DJ Swearinger was kind of one of their leaders back there. Josh Norman, oh, by the way, I think still can play. So, you know, it's another situation where you're having to kind of connect the dots a little bit, but the talent is pretty good. I don't know that it's great, but I don't hate what they have back there. What worries me are teams that can go vertical, because I think those safeties, as good as they are up in the box, playing in space, that could be the kind of thing that really stresses them. So teams like the Eagles and Rams and those type of vertical passing offenses are going to be the ones that I think have the most success against the Redskins defense.
Arthur, you had mentioned before taping the podcast sort of your interest in the rookie redshirts on D. You had mentioned Anderson and Moreau and to the lesser extent, Jonathan Allen and that Alabama East vibe here. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah, no doubt. Eric mentioned Fabian Moreau a little bit and had the unfortunate pro day injury and ends up sliding. I don't know for sure how much stock they were putting in Moreau's year two when they make the Kendall Fuller trade, but I think certainly he's going to be a part of this thing. I'm excited to see what he can do. He's a really good athlete, and I think he probably fits in any scheme. Ryan Anderson, too, you mentioned sort of the Alabama East vibe. Yes, of course, they doubled up in back-to-back first-round picks, going Jonathan Allen last year and then Daron Payne this year. That could be a dominant pairing up front. Excited to see what they can do. But let's not forget Ryan Anderson in round two last year, another maybe fringe first-round talent. They may need him to step up and rush the passer. He was pretty ineffective last season. But remember, Trent Murphy goes to Buffalo. If anything happens here to Ryan Kerrigan, I like Preston Smith too, like Eric. I think he's an intriguing guy, and he is in a contract year. But I don't know that I fully trust him on a down-to-down basis just yet. So if anything happens to that outside linebacker core, they're going to need Ryan Anderson to take a big step. And I'm always just kind of interested in that. The football nerd in me, I'm always looking for the guys who you didn't really hear from much as rookies who really may need to play much bigger roles in year two. So those are just a few of them to consider. And I believe they doubled up on Alabama kids this year, too, what they took a linebacker, too, with a fun name, Deion Sean Hamilton, also from Alabama in this year's draft.
Okay, guys. Well, we're going to take a quick break, but we have much more ahead as we head around the NFC East. We'll look at life after Dez and Winton in Dallas and the latest with OBJ in New York. We'll have that and more coming up. Welcome back, everyone. We are continuing our division-by-division breakdowns and talking about some of the potential for each team and where they might need improvements, focusing this week on the NFC East. And we move now to Jerry's World and the Dallas Cowboys. Eric, let's start with life after Dez and Winton, a tough way to count on a Dak rebound, right?
I think so. I mean, obviously, they've got to be a little bit creative. And getting Ezekiel Elliott back and, you know, having Tyron Smith there for a full season, I mean, that's that's huge, and that's really kind of the bread and butter of what they do. So, this could end up being, one of their best offensive lines if Connor Williams, the rookie, the second-round pick, if he steps in and joins this really talented front five and makes it better. But as you pointed out, you got a bunch of unknown tight ends. You know, they've combined for 9 NFL catches. You have the clear lack of a number one receiver, even if – Michael Gallup, the rookie, steps up, or even if, Allen Hurns plays to his contract, or Cole Beasley has a bounce-back season, or Tavon Austin's decent. I mean, you're still – there's not a number one there. I don't care what anybody says. So, yeah, I have my concerns. I think it's going to have to be schemed up very smartly. Elliott's clearly got to do what he does best. And, yeah, I don't know that the big pass play is going to be all that prevalent if they're not very creative offensively.
Arthur, how scary is it as a thought of Elliott becoming a leader?
I think that was I don't know if that was just one of those sort of offseason headlines I read, or if that's something he is really looking to do now in year three, coming off the missed almost half season with the suspension last year. It scares me, but it's almost oxymoron. Jason Witten, an all-timer, a Hall of Famer, obviously. Dak Prescott's intangibles are unbelievable. People rave about him. But this Cowboys locker room has got some personalities, and it's got some turbulence in it. So they need someone to step up and be a leader. I think if I'm Jason Garrett or Jerry Jones, I'm very quietly nudging Dak to take on even more and maybe tell Zeke to just focus on his conditioning and getting ready for 350 carries this year. Yeah, it's between all the suspensions, all the just lack of accountability, It's certainly a volatile group, we'll call it.
And I'll throw this in there too. There has been a very quiet under the surface concern, and I haven't written about it a lot, but there has been this worry about Dak Prescott too. Not that he is going to be this year's Ezekiel Elliott, but you know, there were some concerns that he maybe spent a little too much time with Elliott, and that may he not be the perfect natural leader everybody expected. I still like the guy. I'm not ready to give up on him. I want to make that very clear, but he's still a young kid. He's made mistakes. You know, he got a DUI after his pro day, and you know, some people still point to that as a sign. He just fired his agent now. That we don't know all the details of that situation, but you know, it's clear there's obviously some things going on here. The attention he receives, so much positive in year one, a lot of negative last year, which is a little bit unfair. But yeah, I mean, this is a crucial year for him just in terms of showing poise, the leadership void, not having his number one receiver there. You know, there's a lot on his table all of a sudden.
Eric, you know, we were talking a little bit about the locker room, and it's obvious that they do things a little differently in Dallas, especially I think with the way some of these guys sort of act. And I mean, I had mentioned it, you know, it's obviously Jerry's world. I mean, it could be dubbed suspension city. I mean, with the latest with Irving, I mean, what does that mean short term, and do you think Dallas will ever kind of change that mentality?
Yeah, I think some of that has been a little overblown, but obviously, you know, when you see a guy like David Irving, who was so good when he was on the field, and you know, it's so disappointing that he's had time and time again. I mean, these issues, you know, started at Iowa State. He gets kicked out of there. You know, was labeled a character reject by a lot of teams. He fired his agent a couple years back. You know, he's still only 24, I believe. I think his birthday's coming up pretty soon, but he's a young kid who acts young, you know, and you know, even though he's kind of dismissed you know, the claims against him with the domestic violence thing with the girlfriend, it always seems like something follows him and some kind of trouble finds him along the way. So he's had now numerous things that have kind of tallied up over the years. And you wonder if he'll ever be that guy. I mean, now we hear good news about Randy Gregory, and that's fantastic. I hope Randy Gregory has put his life back together and has a chance to be a football player again and takes that opportunity and runs with it. That would be great. But you get the idea that, you know, for every success story that we may laud, there's going to still be an Irving type of deal where, you know, a really good player just can't seem to kind of put it all together and figure it out. In terms of his life.
Second straight year, David Irving starts the season suspended. Obviously, Randy Gregory's been away from the team for about a year. We talked about Zeke Elliott. I believe DeMarcus Lawrence has a suspension on his track record, too. So it's obviously a little troubling when, you know, many of your most important players are consistently unavailable for discipline reasons. But look, that's the formula the Cowboys use. They have a sweet spot where they're willing to roll the dice. And David Irving, a much different situation than second rounders like DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory, obviously a fourth overall pick like Zeke Elliott. But you just wonder if they're going to have a bout here at some point where the Cowboys can actually avoid trouble and have all their best players on a weekly basis.
Arthur, the Dallas O-line is locked up for years to come with homegrown, affordable, skilled dudes out there. I mean, they better step up, right?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it a little bit. You know, Michael Gallup is a guy I liked a lot coming out of Colorado State. I don't think he's going to be you know, a 1,000-yard receiver as a rookie or anything, but he's going to have opportunities, and he's just one good example of the guys they need to get work. To make work, excuse me, when you look at recent years, some of their high day two and early day three picks, like, you know, Terrence Williams or Gavin Escobar, Ryan Switzer, the most recent example, they just haven't been able to make it work. And if you're going to pour all your money into the offensive line, and if everything goes according to plan with Dak this year and you're getting ready to lock him up, well, you got to be shrewd somewhere. And it's starting to look like it's going to be at wide receiver and tight end for Dak's weapons. They're going to have to kind of conjure up some production from that position, from those type of under the radar rookies and acquisitions.
Eric, let's talk about the defensive side of the ball. Chris Richard and that effect, and perhaps the youngest secondary in football.
Yeah, Richard comes in, obviously, you know, a guy who played the position and his coach secondary before. has been a defensive coordinator. I think he fits in well with, you know, what Rod Marinelli wants and could really coach up this group. It's crazy to think that, you know, like Byron Jones is kind of the elder statesman of this group. Yeah, I think he was a first rounder, what, 2015. So, you know, a lot of super athletic, varying types of skills here. You've got Jordan Lewis, who played pretty well down the stretch. Chidobe Awuzie was my favorite pick they made at the DB spot. They drafted four DBs in 2017. Awuzie could really end up being a crucial guy. He didn't really play until the end of the season. When he did, I saw some good things. He's a natural blitzer. He can play the nickel. He can play outside. So he's a guy that I'm really keeping my eye on. You know, Anthony Brown was a great surprise a couple years ago, took a step back last year. And, you know, Xavier Woods, too, you forget about him a little, kind of an undersized safety, but he might have been, you know, the most consistent first snap to last snap of all those rookies last year, even with, you know, Lewis playing well. I don't know exactly how they're going to unleash Jones. They've talked about using him as a corner, as a safety, and he's kind of been a little bit of a bust to this point, but that's a ton of talent. What do we just name? Four guys drafted in the top three rounds? You know, I mean, so, you know, if that group comes together, that could really be a fun, special group. I think they only picked off like 9 or 10 passes last year, you know, and I think Jeff Heath had three of them. So, you know, it's got to come from those skilled outside players and the safeties who were drafted to be the playmakers. They're the ones who really have to – nothing against Jeff Heath. I think he's been a great, you know, undrafted free agent. But some of these other guys have to really step up and play to their potential, especially Jones and to a lesser degree, Lewis.
Well, finally, guys, we wrap up the NFC East with the New York Giants. Odell Beckham Jr., I know that's a big story right now, possibly holding out. I mean, Arthur, should he hold out?
I would if I were him, but then again, I don't, you know, for everything he's done to be playing on that, you know, the fifth year option, I believe, of the rookie deal, it makes, even with the big boost in pay, it makes him one of the more underpaid guys in the league. And remember, he hurt himself last year in the preseason. Initially hurt that ankle before it was, you know, he re-injured it or broke it all together early on in the season and never really fully got going. So I know, I understand he may still have some questions to answer off the field, but there's nothing left for him to prove on the field. And I, if I'm his advisor, I'm not telling him to risk going out there until he's got the new deal. That's just my opinion.
Eric, Eli Manning, he's got weapons for days, a coach who knows how to maximize them. Could he potentially turn the clock back to that 2011-2015 production that we've seen in the past?
Yeah, I mean, when you have yards after the catch guys like Beckham back in the lineup, we saw what obviously Evan Engram did as a rookie last year. You add Saquon Barkley, who, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if his best work is done as a receiver, not as a runner, or maybe a returner. But still, I mean, I really think he's going to be great on screens. You know, you get Sterling Shepard back. Don't forget about him. He's a great little player, you know. So all of a sudden, like you said, that should help out immensely. They just look lifeless offensively if Engram wasn't catching a pass last year. So, you know, most of that was because of injuries. They were down, you know, 4 or 5 at one point at wide receiver. That's unheard of. But assuming good health, they beef up the O-line a little bit with Nate Solder and Will Hernandez on that left side. I don't know about the other three guys, but that side may not be too bad. But, yeah, quicker tempo, getting the ball out of his hands and let those guys do the dirty work. That should allow Manning to kind of thrive at, what is he now, 37, 38 years old. So, yeah, that'll do him wonders if those guys could produce.
Arthur, we're looking a little bit at the fits of some of these newcomers. You got Saquon Barkley. We talked about Hernandez and via trade Ogletree, among others. How do these guys kind of fit into this team?
Yeah, I mean, I think really well. Eric mentioned Saquon Barkley's versatility. I can't wait to see if they're going to have the you know what to well, it's a podcast, I can say it, have the balls to use him as a returner, the second overall pick, who's become kind of the new face of your franchise. Interested in that. But yeah, Will Hernandez should be a wonderful fit. I think in Pat Shurmur's offense requires athleticism. Hernandez has more of it than you think for such a big dude. Alec Ogletree is interesting. You know, linebacker has been sort of the weak spot on the Giants defense for a while now. Ogletree is a really athletic player. He's fast and he racks up tackles. I don't know for sure if he's a difference maker or not, but you know, the bigger questions might be, do they still have enough in front of him? Is there someone who's going to replace Jason Pierre-Paul? Do they have stability on the back end that was missing last year, that same group that was so great 2 years ago? So a lot of talent on the defensive side, but really interested to see how it comes together under James Betcher, a coordinator who I really like a lot and think can have a lot of success with this group if he's kind of got, you know, if he can cover up maybe the few weaknesses that potentially exist.
And Eric, who's going to fill this pass rush void?
I think it's going to be James Betcher. I mean, the guy is so aggressive. He'll blitz on first and 10. He'll blitz on second and two. I mean, he brings pressure. He brings more than you can block. And so, you know, it may be the kind of thing where, you know, Kareem Martin has 6.5 sacks. Olivier Vernon is back to that 8, 9, 10, 11 range. And remember, they're switching schemes too. They're going to more of an odd front. This is now considered kind of a 3-4 base defense. So Vernon, he's standing up. This is kind of the Chandler Jones role that, you know, that Betcher helped turn Jones into one of the best pass rushers in the league. He's got the most sacks, 28, over the past two seasons. So, you know, if Vernon is anywhere in that sphere, we're talking about a Pro Bowl player. And so that's one way to get it done. Granted, Damon Harrison, Dalvin Tomlinson, those guys aren't going to give you much on the interior. You lose JPP, that's a blow. So it's got to come from numbers. You know, it's got to have, you know, Landon Collins probably has to have 3.5, 4 sacks as a blitzing safety. You've got to get Lorenzo Carter, the rookie, to maybe be a part-time rusher and give him a real specific role. See, Carter was given, like, he was asked to do a little bit of everything at Georgia. And I never feel like he mastered any of them. He's a freakish athlete. I think if Betcher can just unlock one or two good things out of him, and I liked him going forward better than I liked him going backward, maybe that's the role he ends up playing as a rookie and then expands from there.
And Arthur, finally, there were some personality issues in that locker room on the O-line. Is all of that gone?
You know, we'll see. They quickly released Bobby Hart. I think that was the first move that Dave Gettleman made. So kind of viewed him as a bad apple on the offensive line. He's now out of the equation. They are going to try to salvage Eric Flowers, a real reclamation project, moving him from left to the right side. Yeah, it hasn't been pretty, but he still can't be more than 25 years old. Remember how young he was coming out. Talented, I think, what the former top 10 pick. So they're clearly a new regime isn't ready to give up on him yet. I think it's a calculated risk, but they better have a good backup plan, and it doesn't look like they do. And then in the secondary, another reclamation project in Eli Apple, really good as a rookie and was suspended multiple times last year, just could not get with the program. But that's the kind of the theme here under Pat Shurmur and Dave Gettleman is fresh start. So intrigued about that for sure. Remember, Jonoris Jenkins was suspended too. But man, how was he great 2 years ago? So this whole defense was great 2 years ago, and a lot of the pieces still exist. Really interested to see if it can come back together. Really interested to see if someone like Landon Collins, who said he wants to be the captain of this defense, is able to do that and really can kind of help get this thing on the right track and get everyone going the right way.
All right. Well, before we end our NFC East discussion on today's show, guys, let's talk a moment about the NFC East win totals and get some over-unders going. Here are some of the projections. Let's start with the Cowboys, an 8.5. I feel like this is a tough one, but I think most people tend to take the over here if Dak and Elliott can stay healthy, and of course, if Elliott doesn't get suspended. Eric, how about you?
I wrote this one up for the website, and I went way over. I feel like it's a good football team that, yeah, we outlined their potential pitfalls there, but defensively, I think they're better. The identity of the team will be that run game. Don't forget what Dak did with his legs, too. I know there was, you know, bigger threat of the pass and all that, but I just think that they'll find a way to manufacture the passing yards and make it all kind of work. Are they due to break our hearts in the playoffs? Probably, but I'll go over that number. I like that.
Yeah, I'm going over too, but not with a lot of confidence. I just don't really trust this team, but I do trust that formula that Eric just pointed out with Zeke Elliott, probably the favorite to be the rushing champion this year. That offensive line should be utterly dominant, and I had identified Chris Richard as the best under-the-radar addition in the NFC East this year. I really think he can do good things with what has potentially, you know, the makings of a special secondary down the road. So I'm going to go just over.
All right, next up, the New York Giants. Bovada has them projected at a 6.5. I think this team has some talent, and I'm taking the over here. Arthur, how about you?
Yeah, I am too. I feel like this is going to be a trend in this division. It could end up being the best one in football. But I believe in Pat Shurmur. I still believe in Eli Manning too. I think getting him the right coach and getting him a little bit more help along the offensive line was what was needed. And again, 2 years ago, this was a team that looked like a Super Bowl contender kind of out of nowhere. That's not that long ago. So yeah, I'm going over on this one too.
If you'd asked me 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, a month ago, I probably would have given a hearty endorsement for the over. I've kind of softened since then, but I'm with you guys. I think, 7-9, 8-8, maybe 9-7, that could be the course for this team. I think it's a really good division. I really do. I think top to bottom, it's going to be competitive, and you could see some tiebreakers come into play. But, I wouldn't be shocked if the Giants are pretty competitive this year. And I don't know they're going to push for the playoffs, but I think they're okay. They have some holes, but I feel okay going over that.
We look at Washington projected at 7. I think this Alex Smith-led team will be underappreciated this season, and I think that they are worth taking the over here as well, Eric.
Yeah, I pick over. I know Arthur, I probably convinced him a little bit to consider the same. But, yeah, I mean, I just – maybe I'm not seeing the woods for the trees a little bit on some of this stuff, and you can't ignore the fact they have been this team of dysfunction, that when things look like they're finally getting on track, they also fall apart. So that element is there. The injury factor from last year played a huge role, but I don't know. I get a weird feeling this team is going to be very tough to defend, especially if Geis has that big year I'm expecting. I'll go over on that one. I think they're kind of a 9-7, or maybe even with a tough schedule, 10-6.
Whew. Eric did convince me. I'm not quite as bullish as he is on the club, but as I was writing their over-under story, it kind of occurred to me that the recipe is here. This could suddenly be a really good run defense with those two Alabama behemoths. Darius Geis may be a rookie. Well, I don't know, because Chris Thompson is going to be so involved, but Geis is going to be an early down monster. So if they get that offensive line back and healthy, I think maybe Alex Smith won't have to do too much. That's what's allowed him to thrive in the past. I like this team's competitiveness. I like what Gruden did for him last year despite the injuries, and I'll go just over on this one as well.
Well, guys, finally, the Super Bowl champs, the Philadelphia Eagles, 10.5. If Carson Wentz comes back healthy for week one, I think 10 wins is the floor, but oddly, the under is favored here, plus 120 to the over, which is just a hard number to hit, Arthur.
I'm going under, and I just kind of decided in my head, I'm trying to do some simple math here. If I go over on the other three divisional teams, it seems like I have to go under somewhere. They're loaded, and we already talked about it. I can't find a lot of weaknesses on this club, but I think maybe it's just the byproduct of the rest of the division improving and just those heightened expectations, the shift from underdog to favorite. I think they're going to be really good. I think they're going to have a winning season, a playoff season, but maybe not an 11-win season, Eric.
Yeah, and geez, I mean, they catch a break with Winston, possibly gone in week two. They play the Colts in week three. We don't know Luck's status. A 3-0 start would not be shocking. They get the season open with the Falcons, all that. So after that, though, at Tennessee, Minnesota, maybe a better Giants team. Carolina made the playoffs. Jacksonville, I mean, the number of good defenses they face is notable. So, they finish with 3 out of 4 on the road, at the Rams, a couple of division games late. So it's a tough stretch. Everything from like November on, weekly battle. They would not be doing horribly by going 4-4 in those final 8 games. So, yeah, I'll say they're 10-6. Like you, I'd go under on one of them. I feel a little silly saying the Eagles are the worst team. But, yeah, I'll say under. I still think they're one of the 5 or 6 best rosters in football, if not 3 or 4 best. It doesn't always reflect in the win total. That's why I'm going under.
Well, you can find our win total breakdowns for all 32 teams at ProFootballWeekly.com. As a part of our 2018 NFL Gambling Guide series focused specifically on NFL wagering, so be sure to check those out. Guys, that'll do it for this week's episode of the Pro Football Weekly podcast. We want to thank you all for listening this week. We hope that you head on over to iTunes and subscribe to this podcast if you've not already done so. Also, be sure to head over to ProFootballWeekly.com for the best NFL news 24/7. On our next podcast, we will be here and we will be looking at the NFC North in our division breakdown. So be sure to check that out as well. A big thanks, as always, to Umphreys McGee for the use of our theme song, Out of Order. You can find them on iTunes, so go check them out. And we want to thank you once again for listening. For Eric Edholm and Arthur Arkish, I'm Dan Mott, and we will talk to you next week, everyone. Take care.